So, I decided to do in the same way as I did yesterday, starting with the English and then going to the French rather than having translation. J'ai décidé de faire la même chose qu'hier, donc de ne pas avoir de traduction, mais de faire une langue plus l'autre, commençant par l'anglais. I think I'd like to start with some questions that were in the hall after the meditation when Kit was answering the question. There was a few of you were probing into the question of having an intention and letting go. And is having an intention a way of controlling meditation and maybe sometime lacking openness? And so I think it's a very important question, very interesting question, very complex question again, of course, but just starting there and then see where it leads us. And I think my feeling is that we kind of always have an intention, and that's why we meditate. And maybe we know our intention, or maybe we don't, and something within us knows, and we're not aware of that. But I think maybe for everything we do, everything we think, everything we feel behind this, there is always an intention. So that's something. That's, I'm just saying my feeling. I'm just not asserting that it's like this, but that's my feeling. That's something that would be more to be taken as a question. And when I reflected a little bit on, for instance, the story of the Buddha, which is, even if it's just a very nice story and it didn't happen at all like this, which is very probable, in the story itself tells us a lot about what happened then. And the Buddha left his kingdom because he wanted to find the end of suffering for himself and for others. So that's a strong intention. He had a very clear direction for setting up his goal. And everything he was doing and all his meditation, all his endeavors, all his experiment, fasting, living in jungle with the dangerous animal, like everything he did was because he was moved by this deep, deep intention. And everything was informed and all directions were taken because of that. He was constantly on that path. Or maybe sometime he was just taken out of that path, but then seems like he was quite stubborn, you would say, like just going for it, just going for it. And in the story of Buddhism, after you had this intention that one meditates to step outside of the circle of rebirth. Yeah, to end the circle of rebirth. That was the intention, and people would meditate like this. And I think it's in Mahayana Buddhism that very soon came the idea that the initial intention changed into I vow to practice and realize in order to help all the beings to get out of suffering. So I vow to take rebirth and not step out of the circle, the wheel of life, but to always come back to it as long as there are beings that suffers. So that's a very far goal for, imagine, it's not a lifetime in their philosophy. It's many, many lives that I will not take the freedom. The full freedom, I will always come back in order to help. So that's also an intention. And this kind of intention has a huge impact on what happens in every meditation. And if this intention is clear with us, then it changes how we meditate. it affects how we meditate. If in the beginning of meditation we have these thoughts of compassion, meditating for people that suffer and dedicating our meditation to them, and remembering that we meditate so that we reach freedom in order to be able to help more the people around us, you see, that's an intention. It does not mean that we are looking for something specific in this meditation, so it doesn't close the meditation, but that's a very clear goal, a very clear intention. There can be also more specific intention in this meditation. I will practice like this, and I will watch this. I will train concentration, and I will just stay with my breath. Or I will practice whatever. So many ways of practicing around. Maybe I will practice observing anything that has a beginning, a duration, and an end, for instance. Impermanence, realizing impermanence. So in my meditation, I will just watch impermanence. Things begin, last, and ends. I'm not interested in the things themselves. I'm just watching this movement all the time to realize and to be more familiar with that. That's an intention. That intention closes our meditation and gives it a direction. If we feel it's useful, then good. Yeah. Then the intentions like this, you can have so many. And if you feel like it's a good one for you, then it closes the meditation in a certain specific direction. And then there is the idea of no intention and just letting go. Whatever comes, I relax the whatever there, if there is clinging, I relax the clinging so that it can go, that it doesn't stay. I will let go of anything that presents itself. But that's also an intention. That's an intention that doesn't give a specific direction, that is quite open, but we have an intention. We have a direction somehow in our practice. It's not a focus, but still it's a direction in our practice. It's still an intention. So that's why I'm thinking and wondering if it's possible to be without intention. Just a question. And of course, this question also applies in daily life, in anything. Then in meditation we can see that we will grasp ideas, thoughts, according to what is important for us. So for instance, if I want to become rich, any thought around money will grasp me. If I don't care to be rich, maybe a thought about money will come, but it will not have any grasping on me. Maybe I am very much into sexuality. Then a thought on sexuality will come, it will grasp me. Or maybe I'm very relaxed with that, and the thought may come, but it will not end up being a full story. Maybe my thing is more to be recognized, and then any ideas on how to be recognized or any wound about not being recognized will grasp. I will just grasp it and it will become a story. It depends on what are my importances, what is important for me, what am I looking for. Basically, we could almost say, what are my deep intentions? What am I really looking for? What I'm really looking for is what will be attractive when it comes, and that's what I will grasp. And I'm thinking about Einstein, for instance. He was describing when people were asking, how come that you made such deep discoveries? And he was saying, like, I'm not working fast, but I'm working all the time. It's all the time there. When I have a question, you know, he had this big question about gravity. I don't know. So he had this deep question from 1905 until when he discovered, like almost 10 years after. For 10 years, he had this big problem in his theory of relativity. I don't know the names in English of all this, but I guess you're with me, I hope. And so he was all the time there. And when he was having his siesta, he describes this, he was sitting on his little bench, not putting his back against the wall, like holding his back, and going to a half siesta. Yeah, and he had sometimes feelings of falling in the void, or he would see himself sitting on a ray of light at speed light, or he would have visions like this, because inside he was not aware, he was not practicing something, but inside it was so important to him that it was there all the time. There's a fire burning there, and that's how he came to deep foundings. He found amazing things, many, so many, always with that. Not that he was like hard with him at work, but it was so important to him, he could think of nothing else. So I think that's also intention in a way. It's like that one you don't let go of. It's your primary, only, sole, most important direction. If that is, then it will manifest. If that is not, you can practice whatever you want. It will not manifest. It has to come from a burning fire inside of curiosity, of intuition, like really having intuition that there is something to seek. There is a way. And if you deeply feel that, that will give the movement in meditation, whether you're aware or not. Even when we're not aware, this is working. Like for Einstein, his greatest discoveries never happened when he was thinking consciously. It came like this, when he was not there. And one of my teacher that I read a book from him for 20 years, almost every morning, Nisargadatta Maharaj, he said, like, if I'm not sure if he uses the word realization or freedom, or but like, if that, what we're speaking about, was your sole and only concern, it wouldn't take that long to be realized. But we have so many different wantings. We want so many things. Of course, we want freedom, realization, well-being, but we also want fulfillment of our desire. So many other desires than that one, that we're scattered. And sometimes it's the Dharma, and sometimes it's so many things else. And obviously, that's normal. It is normal. We're not monks. We live, we have a lot of concern, and we have to take care of the life we're in. It's not only about realizing emptiness. So it's normal that we have this concern, but it's the if within, I believe that the more there is a fire burning inside and a knowing that there is something to seek and something to discover and the understanding that there's something to get free of, then even in daily life, that will make the path. So the Buddha, I think, I don't know, I didn't read much the text or a little bit, but I don't think he was using the word letting go. Even in the translation, I don't think you find this very much. Maybe, what's the closest is maybe non-clinging. But it's not different. It is different, sorry. Non-clinging is different than letting go. Because letting go is letting go of something you already clung to. Non-clinging is like something passes and you just don't take it. So that's the image of the thought that passing like a cloud. And then it goes away. You see it, but you don't take it. So you don't follow it and it doesn't become a distraction and a full story. So that's non-clinging. Letting go is when you have already caught the cloud, make it in a very big cloud and there is no sky to be seen anymore, and then you realize, and then you try to let go of that. But if we cling to something, it's because we're interested in it. We always come back to that. We're clinging because we like it, or we think, we believe that if we succeed in this, or if we like this story has something pleasant that pleases us, which means it's not only that we want to become that, but when this is happening, we feel some happiness as if that was what we are seeking. Or maybe a story is difficult and we think we need to solve it so that we can be happy. Yeah, so this story comes again, maybe from my childhood or from a very recent past. And again, I grasp it. Maybe I'm smoking and I want to quit smoking. The idea of smoking comes and bam, it's solidified into a big thing and it can't go. It was just something that could have passed by, but it's been caught because there's resistance to it. Time is going so fast. How can I say everything that I want to say to you? So I want to read a saying from a Zen patriarch, Sang Tsun. He says, "The supreme way is not difficult if you do not pick and choose. The supreme way is not difficult if you do not pick and choose. When love and hate are both absent," and I think this is very strong, "love also absent. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction between things, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart." So in meditation, I think we take this as meditation instructions. For me, it means that we are, this is following yesterday's talk, that in these kinds of advices, it means we train to not seek anything within what is coming and going. We're not seeking things to stay because they're pleasant. We're not seeking that they go because they're unpleasant, even if it's a pain, even whatever, because it's not there that we look for what we're looking for. It's not in this direction. So we pacify this grasping. I want more of this. I would like this to stop. The mind gets pacified. It can stop this movement. We come to more a balanced, equanimous mind, silent mind, because we have no interest in that. But why are we so invested in this world of personality and ego and desires and everything that makes that we can't just be silent? What happens, what is the trigger that pushes us out of the silence? Maybe many of us have been sometime in a quite relatively good moment of silence, and we know there is something very pleasant in that. Yet, anything that comes and whoop, we grasp again and we're gone into building stories and worlds. I think understanding why there is this movement will be maybe more efficient than trying to let go when there has been the clinging. It's understanding why are we so interested and invested in this movement. And to understand that, I have a story to say that it's a joke from my childhood. I think in my Dharma talks, this is the story I'm using the most, because I find it very funny, and also because I think there's a lot to learn in this story. So the story is, it's a guy, he's in a mental hospital, and he believes he's a worm, like worm. You know these things that people use for going to fish and chicken like to eat? A worm, okay? And he believes he's a worm. So he's treated for that. The nurse are very kind with him, but it really creates some problems, especially when he goes in the garden because there are some chicken. And then he's very afraid. So he can't go in the garden. He stays always inside and everything. So and every year then he has a chance to check. They check if he's cured and they say, oh, why you? And then they find out he still believes he's a worm. So he stays there for many, many years. But at some point, the nurse very kind and speaking with him and a lot of support. Then he progresses and then... And then he said to them one year, he said, yeah, now I know I'm not a worm, I know I'm a man. And they're like, okay, that's great. Then you can leave, you know? And he's making his luggage, ready to go out. And then when he comes in the garden, then there are the chickens there. And then he watched the nurse and he said, okay, now I know I'm not a worm, but do they know the chicken that I'm not a worm? So, I think there's a lot to learn, let's say now we're a nurse in this hospital and we see this man, how do we help him? What would we do? Would we teach him mindfulness of the breath when the chicken arrive? Or letting go of fear? Will that help? Let go of your fear. Will that solve his problem, ultimately? Dealing with emotions, prayers. What would we do to help him? I think I would try to find ways to deal with emotion and let go of fear, yes, but so that he gets quiet enough to understand that there's a big problem in the way he views himself. He misunderstands who he is. And that's the basic problem. And unless he sees that, you can't help him really. That's my reading of the story. And that's also my reading of Buddhism. Is that we are given many tools to quieten down the mind, but the aim is not to quieten down the mind, but to realize who we are and who we are not. And so teachings go when we have kind of enough mindfulness, enough ability for compassion, very needed. I never spoke yet about it. Time is very limited, but compassion is a big aspect of the practice, very needed to practice as well. But when there is enough stability of the mind, then this is when it starts to try to understand why we're in such a mess, what makes the constant neurosis and agitation that we find ourselves in. And these teachings are, for me, like, there's more than that, but then they go in the direction of emptiness and non-self. I think these teachings are when one starts to understand what emptiness and non-self can mean, already just that, can mean, then already some letting go happen. Already some non-clinging. Already some non-attachment or detachment happens. We change perspective and we change the way we relate to ourselves and the world. That's where it happened. That's where transformation happened. So transformation will happen in this tradition of Buddhism, will happen through understanding, not only experience. The way we will understand the experience of silence will create the transformation and the freeing. We may fall in a very deep silence and come out of it. If there's no understanding, nothing changes. There's a story in India about it. It's a sadhu, so a monastic, a monk in Hinduism. And he's with his helper, and so he arrives at the Ganges, and he says to his helper, "Can you bring me some water? I'm thirsty." And he sits for meditation. And then these sadhu, they, you know, they're fantastic. They go for meditation. So he stays 200 years, let's say. Yeah, maybe more, I don't know. I don't remember, but so long. He stays in meditation. Very deep samadhi, very profound, like nothing. Total empty. And then after 200 years, he opens his eyes and he says, first thing that comes is, "Where's my water?" That's the story. It means it hasn't changed much. It didn't change much. The realization will not be the experience. It will be how we understand and what we make of it. So I really feel deeply that what puts us always in action and this need for more and more and more, for becoming someone, for having more, for is, yes, our society. But all our society is like this because all our awareness is invested only in one direction of becoming, and of becoming someone, and of being special, and of finding security for oneself. It's all about a self, myself. That's the root of movement. And I believe that it's needed that this idea of a self, because it's an idea, if we look deeply, we are not sure, nobody can prove that there is a self. So, but we don't question these things, so intuitively we feel I am a self. But nobody can prove that. It's never been proven, and if you watch philosophy, for instance, then you will find many people who say no, and they demonstrate that there is not a self, or again in Buddhism with the non-self. So if we weaken the certainty in I am only a self, and if we get a little bit of playfulness, then there is less danger, where there's more sense of security, there's more need for things to happen and to confirm ourselves all the time. Maybe one day we go out of the mental hospital. It's not a problem of our time, because 2,500 years ago the Buddha was speaking about it and trying to have people understand. So it's not our society, it's not our time. It's the human story that we're in. And it's, if you have some passion around this, it's the most beautiful, in my understanding, it's the most beautiful search one can have. Who am I, finally? Thank you for your listening.